Good evening. If everyone could find a seat, we'll get our council meeting underway. Our city council has just returned from a closed session, which had to do with negotiating with employee organizations. Is there any item to report?
No reportable item.
Thank you. We'll go ahead with our regular session. I'll call the meeting to order, and we'll begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman Sturdivant. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Here.
Councilmember Kelly?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Next item is the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank the whereases. Whereas Thursday, September 24th through September 27th, 2015, marks the 6th annual Sunset Savor the Central Coast event, and whereas the 4-day Sunset Savor the Central Coast event showcases the California Central Coast's premier food, wine, and spirits, chef 5% of its attendance coming from outside the market area, and whereas Sunset Savor the Central Coast brings culinary tourism to our city, affluent patrons to our restaurants, and visitors to our hotels, and whereas revenues from the 2014 Sunset Savor the Central Coast event boosted the local economy by $4.48 million, and the economic impact and overall awareness that Savor creates for local tourism reaffirms the event's ongoing success, and now therefore we, the City Council members of the City of Atascadero, hereby proclaim this period as Sunset Savor the Central Coast Week. And welcome. You're going to tell us a little bit more about this. Please state your name.
My name is Jordan Carson. I just want to say thank you on behalf of Visit San Luis Obispo County and Sunset Savor the Central Coast. We would like to thank everyone here as well as the City of Atascadero. Savor is a great showcase for the Central Coast. Our gourmet food, wine, spirits, ciders.
Thanks for coming out. Next item on the agenda is the consent calendar, considered to be items fairly routine and can be voted on as a group unless any member of the council or the public wishes to poll for further discussion. I am going to poll item 6 for a little bit extra discussion. After all, you never know. And then, I think we know. Is there any other item? I understand Mayor Pro Tem Moreno has asked for some changes in the council action minutes, item 1. Shall we pull that as well?
Yes, please.
Okay. Any other council members wishing to pull an item? Any member of the public? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion on items 2 through 5 in the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes, with the exception of number 5. That'll be a no.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, except for number 5.
Thank you. Let's have...
But possibly... conversations were disjointed, or Marcia, you could.
Yeah, I went back to the tape and listened to it, and as you can see in both of them, I actually put quotes around the portions that were actually the quoted, and I was assuming it's a lengthy item that I, you know, to listen to, and that is the portion where I'm thinking that you meant that you wanted added about. I didn't want to just put down what Ms. Gomez said about we can take it back to our VP. I felt that I should add the part that the city attorney said ahead of that, explaining what the contract said, it seemed to make more sense to put them both in the minutes. Is that those are quoted from what she said.
I understand that. That's
so fine. I can read it into the record if you'd like, Mayor, or not.
You're satisfied?
I'm satisfied.
Why don't we, just since it is a change and it's being discussed, why don't you read it into the record and then we'll vote on that item.
Okay, this was the item on the buyback center options, and it was after public comment that the city attorney read from the staff report, quote, the contract further indicated that the proposed resolution would be brought back to the city, and the council request they submit a letter to the city agreeing to extend the date to a mutually agreed upon date. And then Ms. Gomez, who is the waste management representative, stated, quote, we can take that back to our company VP, and I'm sure he would be willing to, a letter would come from us that we are willing to extend the contract date of August 15th.
Something does come to mind, just the first part about the city attorney and his quote, and right after that it says he stated that given their willingness to continue, I would say waste management's willingness to continue. So it's clear because there could say the city's willingness or...
Okay.
Yeah.
I could also have put down exactly what he said. It was more or less what he said, but yes, he was referring to that.
As long as you clarify that it was waste management had that willingness.
Okay. Sure.
Thank you, and that satisfies my request. Thank you.
Okay, and you're clear on item one.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, seconded by Councilman Fonzi on consent calendar item number one. We can just do a voice vote on that?
You may.
A voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item five. Oh, yes, item six, the one that I pulled. Confirmation of the appointment of a deputy... the Director of Community Development, and we're very pleased to have this young man join us. I had the honor of speaking before the Home Builders Association's breakfast meeting down in San Luis recently, and he was in the audience and got to watch him enter.
But one candidate rose to the top, and we're very excited that I have selected to be our new Community Development Director. Phil comes to us with a vast amount of experience. He is an Atascadero resident and loves Atascadero, so that's a plus. He already sees how wonderful we are. He's currently working in the city of San Luis Obispo, where he's a senior planner, has done both long-range planning down there and development planning, and has worked on a number of large projects, including the Irish Hills project and several of the big shopping centers down there. So we're very excited to have him, and it looks like his family.
Thank you. Thank you, Rochelle, and thank you, Council. It was about 16 years ago that I first began working in this building, and I had a feeling eventually I'd be back. And I think that time has arrived, and I'm very proud to be, again, part of the Atascadero team. I'm honored to take on that role, and I look forward to the challenges and the successes that lie ahead, and I think together we can do great things. I think this is a great town. It has awesome potential, and it's my home. It's where I work and play. I live here with my family, my wife, Mary, and my two sons, Liam and Noah, who attend the Atascadero Fine Arts Academy. And I think this whole thing is a great fit, and I hope that everything goes well together. Thank you.
Thank you.
In addition, it's my
good job. He turned out pretty darn good. We're very pleased to have you join us.
Yeah, Tom, I'd just like to add, I know you went back 16 years ago. I was trying to remember how long ago it was when I was somewhat more active in the building and development business. And I think Phil was a younger man, just like everybody else, and it was always a pleasure to come into City Hall and work with you on some of the projects, and that wasn't always the case. And I really look forward to you coming back to town, especially that you reside here and everything else. I think we've made it just a great choice, and I want to welcome you to the city. And
your
kids are over there smiling, and they should be very proud of them. Your dad does a really good job. So
thank
you for letting us have them.
Thank you. Well, with that, I will move we adopt consent calendar item number six.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor O'Malley. Second.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
I'll say yes, and I think Dad missed the presentation, but you can probably catch it on a rerun, Channel 20.
And Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Updates from our city manager.
you, Mayor. Well, we're going to start off with the big birthday bash that we had over the weekend. We celebrated the 60th anniversary of the Charles Paddock Zoo this weekend with birthday cake and ice cream on Sunday. Saturday's birthday party included lots of delicious cake and ice cream served up by our mayor and council members, along with Debbie Arnold, Diane Greenaway, and Mary Kay from the school board. So quite a good group of volunteers there serving out free ice cream. Nobody ever is sad when they're getting free ice cream. So it was their presence and try and find the goodies inside. We don't have final numbers, but it seemed like the event was very well attended. The zoo staff reports the celebration was a huge success, and there was great attendance throughout the weekend. And we heard numerous comments from people who had traveled to the zoo from outside the county, including at least one person who was here from L.A., and that's what this says. But I talked to somebody from Montana, and I talked to somebody from Nebraska, too. I'm not sure they weren't here just for the birthday weekend, but they certainly enjoyed it while I was here. So it was well attended and a great event, and happy birthday to the Charles Paddock Zoo. Happy anniversary, I guess. We have another celebration coming up, and that's going to be on this Friday, September 11th, and it's going to go from 5 to 8:30 p.m. It's going to be a wonderful celebration, celebrating a lot of different things. So the City of Atascadero invites everyone to a very special Patriots Day lighting of City Hall, the best from the Australia Warbirds Freedom Flight, and that's going to occur at 5:10 p.m. So even if don't happen to be right in the Sunken Gardens, you'll be able to see those fly over. It's a great ceremony watching those old Warbirds fly. And it's going to be following fire truck rides. The evening will continue with the Atascadero's Main Street Art and Wine Tour, which begins at 5:30 p.m. with a stroll through downtown. You can buy bracelets and wine glasses at the corner of El Camino Real and Entrada beginning at 4 p.m. And City Hall will be a new location on the wine tour for the evening, with vintage cowboy wines being poured by Supervisor Debbie Arnold out on the front of Palma Avenue. So it's a bonus art and wine tour. If you guys haven't been to one of those, they're a great event, a good chance to go downtown, see our shops, enjoy some wine, and our beautiful evenings here in City Hall. It promised to be a spectacular evening that night. We're going to have a special Patriots tribute candle lighting ceremony and moment of silence to honor our local police, fire, and veterans hero, and that's going to begin approximately at 8 p.m., and then the tribute will be followed by the countdown to the unveiling of the new historic City Hall exterior lighting. And at the end, we'll have our City Hall, our Veterans Memorial Building here, lit up from now, hopefully for a long, long time to come. And it's a beautiful building, and we also want to show it off at night. So this was a project that took a long time in the coming, but we think it's going to be worth the wait. So we're excited about September 11th. Our Citizen Sales Tax Oversight Committee, as most of you remember, as part of the sales tax, additional sales tax ordinance that went into effect on April 1st, there was a committee that is formed of different community group members. So the committee is made up of representatives appointed from 7 local community groups, and those community groups were solicited and put their name in for interest for that, and the Association of Realtors, the Chamber of Commerce, the Atascadero Moose Lodge, the Quota Club, and 2 at-large members. The first meeting was held here on City Hall on August 31st with all 9 members present, and the committee adopted their rules and bylaws. They elected a chairperson, who is Colonel Bill Hatch, and a vice chair, Grigor Jones. And the first meeting included an introduction to pavement management, or Pavement Management 101, which are presentations that the council have seen a number of times. We went over your critical point management selection criteria for how roads are selected, and it gave them an opportunity to ask a lot of questions. We think we received some very positive feedback. We've also received very positive feedback on our first 2 roads that have been paved on those funds. As you know, we didn't get our first check for the funds. People go, well, we voted for it in November. How can we ever see more? We didn't get our first check till June. And that being said, we've already spent money out there. So we did road repairs on both Honda and Alamo Roads, Both of those projects are look really sharp. I encourage people to please drive out there and take a look at the work. We have a lot more roads coming up in the future, so this is an exciting time to get some of our roads fixed. September is Library Card Month, a time when the American Library Association and libraries across the country remind parents the library card is the most important school supply of all. Last week, Mayor O'Malley, Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, and Councilmember Fonzi, together with Chief Haley and Chief Stone, joined Atascadero librarian Joseph Lorenzi to see the beautiful new library and all of the resources it has to offer. We joined the library in encouraging everyone to get their library. It's still good to go to the library. Stormwater prep. I'm going to have Nick talk a little about stormwater preparation, both what we're doing and what we want to ask our residents to do. There's a lot of talk about El Nino and hopefully a lot of rain that's coming our way. With that rain, there's a lot of good that comes with it, but there's some potentially some challenges that we have, and Nick is going to tell you what we're doing about that.
Thank you, Rochelle. City staff has been real busy preparing for the El Nino. Does anybody know what El Nino means? The Nino. That's what I've been told. Actually, I think little boy.
Thanks,
sorry. But anyways, Public Works, we've been really busy clearing catch basins, removing sand and debris and leaves from those. We've also been stockpiling sand at the fire station number one and the courtyard. We also have a big pallet of sandbags, so we're going to be pre-filling the sandbags here in the next month and or two, where folks need to come and get sandbags or any sand they can. We've also got a few trash pumps that we've maintained and made sure they're ready to go in case we have any localized flooding and intersections or anywhere. We can run out there and make quick work out of getting rid of that water. The monthly and quarterly street sweeping continues. This has been occurring more in the downtown district. We've also trimmed a lot of trees in the right-of-way and removed some just to make sure that, we've got the roads cleared. We've had a lot of limbs dropping the last month and a half, and it's the trees are really stressed right now, and I think once we finally get some rain, we're going to have more tree limbs and trees falling down. Positive drainage away from your home. And then also, if you see, have a culvert or anything like that underneath your driveway, drainage ditches, any conveyances, make sure those are clear and properly working. Any landscaping that might be blocking these, you should really kind of look at and make sure that water has unimpeded leaves or grass into the street or into these ditches or conveyances. A lot of folks do that, and we try to make notice or give them notice, it floods everybody, not just, the property. And then also look around your trees around above your home, above the roads out in front of your home, and just make sure those are in good shape. And be prepared for power outages. So, this last rain that we had, that freak rain event this summer, I know at my home I lost power for a few hours, but, we could be losing it for days. So make sure you have, batteries in your flashlight, and if you have a generator, make sure that's working, you have fuel for it. And then if you have an emergency or an urgency after hours, say a street's flooded out in front of your home, call the city dispatch line, which is 461-5060, and they'll dispatch Public Works maintenance crew to come out. And then lastly, I'll take a shameless. Volunteers can meet at the City Hall parking lot at East Mall and Lewis Avenue. And make sure to bring gloves, sturdy shoes, and a small backpack to keep your water in. And don't forget your family and friends, too. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. He actually stole my plug for Creek Cleanup Day.
Yeah. Excuse me. I was going to bring this up later on, but it might be the time to do it. Is over the last few weeks, I've had several people contact me about when are we going to clean the lake out. And I've taken several trips around the lake, and it looks like in maybe half of the lake, the weeds or bushes, whatever they are, 3, 4, or 5 feet high. I'm just wondering if that's something that we need to consider before the El Nino. They're predicting, I think, close to 50 inches emergency situation because of the El Nino prediction, and address it and try to clean that lake out a little bit.
Yeah, those weeds are really unsightly, and they wouldn't have even grown if we had water. That surface that they're growing out of was water, they just wouldn't have been allowed to grow. So they will die off once the water comes in, but that takes up valuable volume, and I think if the water were to come in there without removing some of those weeds, I'd be concerned about water quality and as that those weeds degrade and decompose. So we are talking to a biologist right now to find out our course of action. We do have a permit that we can go up to the edge of the lake and clear some debris and pick up trash and all that, but once you get into that lake bed, it becomes a different story. So we will be talking with the Fish and Game and also the State Water Board to see what we can't do about those weeds. Hopefully they'll allow us to go in there with mechanical means, and then we'll be able to clear that out pretty quickly. They might also require that we have to use hand tools or pull them out by hand, so you know we'll have to get some additional help, you know, maybe from the Conservation Corps somewhere else. So we are looking into that, and I can you know, provide an update at a future council meeting.
Well, I think one of the concerns is I think we start getting some heavy rains in November, so we really have a very, very small window to accomplish this with permitting processes and what have you. And I think when we originally started talking about the lake, isn't there a situation where the city manager
quality control, but that's part of what he's looking into to see what we can do and
okay, thank
still,
you.
Still be there.
Thank you. Well, this is a topic I asked our city manager to bring up because I have also heard concerns for some time, and I've been acting on that with a regular meeting with Mayor Martin up in Paso Robles and County Supervisor Debbie Arnold. We want to kind of work together in the North County. I think our city is actually a little bit ahead of the other agencies in getting the required permission from state agencies to take the action that we're talking about, and the county in Paso Robles is also seeking some approval on that. And I've also talked with our assemblyperson Katya Shajian and our Senator Monning's office about the difficulty working with the state agencies, but I think in any case our staff has been proactive in working with these. It does take some time. We were very fortunate to get the lake dredged anyway, but it would be good if we can attack those weeds as well. But I do appreciate staff's being proactive. When I began talking with other agencies, I was pleased to hear that our city was actually a little bit ahead to help on this. Any other report from the city manager?
I would just like to bring up one more plug, and that is for Colony Days, which will be on October 17th here in Atascadero. I have our Colony Days buttons for the City Council already, so they're out. Make sure that you buy your Colony Day button. You don't want to get caught in Colony Days without one. I wanted to do a plug for a new event that's in conjunction with Colony Days, and that'll be Tent City After Dark. They are going to keep Tent City open into the evening, and this will be a separate event where there will be food and wine and spirits. I'm not sure what the spirits will be, but and music. And it's just a wonderful time to enjoy that very unique setting in the evening with the old-fashioned lanterns and some of that out there. Some great music. I believe there's going to be several bluegrass bands and other stuff. So I will bring you more information as we go along, but everybody, please mark your calendar for October 17th. And that's what I have. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. And, of course, we also participated in the Long Walk Home Supporting ECHO. We had, I believe, Councilman Sturdivant, Councilman Fonzie, Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, and I, and a whole lot of others in the community walking along. And then, of course, Mayor Markton and I were chaperones that evening. We try to do that once a year, and that's always an experience. Thank you. And thank you. Now, it is customary on anything that's not on the agenda, but it's under our jurisdiction. We do allocate a maximum of 30 minutes. Usually we don't need that much time, but we will make sure we hear from any of you on any topic. So I'll open that up if anyone would like to address the council. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. Ron Alsop with the San Luis Obispo County Office of Emergency Services. I'm here to provide a thank you to the city. And a quick side note, that happened when the fire that started on Cuesta Grade itself spotted over or jumped, you know, flames carried ahead and ignited an area that started burning in towards Santa Margarita as well as some other directions. So it jumped ahead and was spotting, as they call it, to the degree that a decision was made by CAL FIRE people. And that turned out to be temporarily to Paloma Park. So I would appreciate the assistance from the city of Atascadero. And not only did fire and police have representatives there at the park, but the restrooms were kept open all night. The lights were kept on. The sprinklers were turned off for the lawn, so that was certainly beneficial to the folks. And I also want to add that, in general, the city of Atascadero is very helpful with the countywide emergency response and mutual aid. You have your disaster trailer. I know some members of the city council sitting up here and some of the staff in the room have been to the National Emergency Training Center on community-wide preparedness, all involved. And we have a very good emergency management type operation in the EOC. Speaking of storms, I've been in there in two of the storms, including when the bridge went down in, what was that, I think 1995, 41 Bridge, as well as that odd storm that we had a number of years ago. So you all do really great with that. I want to make a note, and also with schools, the school district, you know, we all work as a community. And no surprise that Stu Stoddard from the school district. We got Santa Rosa Academic Academy opened relatively quickly for the Red Cross folks to move the folks from Paloma Park over into the school for the regular Red Cross shelter. But some folks did camp out overnight at Paloma Park, and that was certainly appreciated. And I know the park was also closed to general use for the convenience of those folks. So I'd just like to close by saying I think we have a great countywide organization. We work well here together, as illustrated by some of the past things we've done. And on that note, as you know, we had a CAL FIRE, it's not CAL FIRE, it's an incident management called a Type 1 Incident Management Team. Kind of the big guns that go around the state to manage large-scale emergencies are called a Type 1 team. The incident commander from that team was a CAL FIRE person from Northern California, has been on the team for 20-some-odd years now, and in his 33 years with CAL FIRE, he's never seen a county with the local organizations that work so well together. So kudos to you and to the rest of the organizations that work together, and thank you for your time. And also, as a citizen, I'm proud of the work that the city does, the emergency management folks and others. And so, again, thank you for your time, and we'll keep pedaling away with all this.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. My name is Linda Hendy, president of your Chamber of Commerce here in town. Just a couple quick things. We wrapped up a great summer with our Tuesday in the Park barbecues. We've served over 5,000 dinners each Tuesday, and actually not each Tuesday, altogether, over 500 each week, which I don't know if anybody does that in this county, that many dinners, but it did benefit 15 nonprofits. So it's a great fundraiser, and we really want to thank the community because without them and everyone buying their dinners, it wouldn't be possible. So fantastic summer. And then our next event that I'd like to just mention for the community as well is our Business Expo that is coming up September 17th. And we have over 80 booths, businesses local that will be out setting up and showcasing what they have to offer to the public, and a lot of great networking, new businesses that are coming to showcase as well. So it's always fun, a great event. So we really want the public in Atascadero to come out and support all these great businesses here in town, September 17th. Thank you.
The founders of Parents for Joy, and we're doing this great fundraiser, and we are so lucky to have our Mayor Tom O'Malley and our Police Chief Gerald to do a dunk tank fundraiser for us. So what we have until October 3rd, we are trying to raise $5,000. We have a dunk tank that's going to be ready and set up at 10 o'clock, and when we reach our goal, we're going to dunk them at to open our fundraiser event we're having that day in Second Gardens. So I brought this flyer, and it has enough tabs for every one of you guys to get one, so you can make a donation. And I want to let everyone know that it's a GoFundMe. So if you go to your computer and you put GoFundMe.com/ParentsForJoy, it'll go right to the page where you can donate directly to this fund. We've already raised over $1,500, which is good, but they're starting to feel confident that they're not going to get wet, so we need to make sure that this really does happen. So I really want to thank these two gentlemen for offering this huge, wonderful thing for a fundraiser, and all the monies that are raised are going to help establish our special playground that we are going to be building in behind the community center here.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm going to leave this up here so you all can get a tab. Okay, make sure.
Leave it with the city manager because she will make sure it gets distributed. I'm sure our city attorney would like to contribute. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Sarah Sullivan. I'm also from Parents for Joy. And this is the event that Janelle was talking about. It's on October 3rd. It's at Sunken Gardens. And there's going to be a barbecue by the Elks. There's a bunch of live entertainment. We have a stage with lots of kids' songs and story time. Lots of different bounce houses. There's jousting, face painting. And then we'll also have a bunch of different vendors lined up along the path. Hopefully we see you guys on October 3rd.
And what would be the time frame for these events?
It is from 10 to 2. Yeah.
10 to 2.
10 to 2.
And have you arranged that the chief will be wearing a squirt gun that day so there's no damage to his... Thank you. Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak? Seeing none approach, we'll close the community reports. The first one is... Water conservation update for municipal parks and facilities. Again, our city engineer, Nick DeBar.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. It's loading up here. And earlier this year in April, the Governor Brown mandated through an executive order that the statewide has 25% reduction in their water use compared to 2013. And this period that it's applicable for is between June 2015 through February 2016. To implement the order, the State Board adopted emergency regulations in May 5th, and they established 9 tiers of conservation. These conservation tiers range between 4% and 36%. I can keep going unless you want me to wait. I can wait for, see if we can get this.
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. The in May, the Atascadero Mutual Water Company Board of Directors adopted revisions to their Stage 2 water shortage regulations. These regulations also had prohibitions on wasteful use of water to comply with the their consumption in any given month from 2013. And the Atascadero Mutual Water District was mandated to reduce their percentage by 28%. This is really based on residential use last year between July and September, and those 9 districts needed to reduce it a little higher than others, and a lot of that had to do with the size of lots that are in town and the type of use on those lots. So, and say San Francisco, you know, or Berkeley or somewhere where they have smaller lots and lower consumption per capita daily, they probably had a lower rate, like around the 4% or tier one. So some of the prohibited activities include runoff from landscape surfaces, also washing of hard surface areas without fixed. Maintenance flushing, this applies to us with some of our sanitary sewer cleaning activities. We still continue to do those, but we need to get permission from the water district prior to doing that. Also washing of vehicles without a shutoff nozzle. So you can still wash your vehicles, you just can't do that without a shutoff nozzle. Outdoor watering days, so that continues with you know, the odd even. And then the hours of doing that as well. So it's prohibited, you know, during the day. Also, decorative water features. If you're going to run that, you need to have a recycling pump. So we actually tried turning off, and we did turn off the fountain in Sunken Gardens for a day. And then we found that it was too much of a liability because we had teenagers and youth, you know, trying to climb up into the bowl or skateboarding and doing other things in there. So we thought it's not worth the 30 gallons a week that we might save from that. And so we turned it back on. Also, irrigating during and after 48 hours after a rain event. So a significant rain event, cannot do that. Restaurants now cannot just automatically bring you water. They need to actually ask if, you know, you have to ask for a glass of water or they won't bring you one. Irrigation of median turf in public streets. This is another one is that applies to us that we've been doing. New construction irrigation must be drip or micro spray systems. Also, there was two other ones, hotel laundry and then commercial use water use reduction. A commercial water use reduction also applied to us. This was that we immediately needed to take steps towards reducing our consumption after the executive order. So the good news is that we are meeting and exceeding that 28% reduction mandate. The chart here kind of shows our consumption in the year 2013 and 15 for the months of May through August. And I'm happy to report that we've reduced water by almost one-third from 2 years ago for those months. So we're tracking right now at 32.2%. So here's some of the activities and just some estimated volume that we've been saving. We've shut off water to the Colony Park Great Lawn. This is actually where the Parents for Joy are proposing to build their playground behind the community center. It saves approximately 5,500 gallons per week. We've also capped over 40 sprinkler heads at Colony Park. This would be in the landscaped areas on the embankment along Traffic Way and other planter areas in and around the other recreational facilities there. And this equates to about 6,000 gallons per week. We've also reduced the rotor sprinkler heads at Atascadero Lake Park, which saves about 4,500 gallons per week. Accessibility path, and around that path, we end up mulching instead of seeding. We also shut off irrigation between the softball fields at Palomo Park, which saves about 4,500. Reduced. This next one is a huge one. We reduced the irrigation controllers to 70% of the demand, and I'll get to that in a minute here. No watering of median landscapes except the trees, so we run it that way, but we're not watering anything in the medians along the parkways. Transit center and zoo parking lots and all, you know, we've only been using it for about a month now. But it's an absorption product that's supposed to take moisture out of the atmosphere or the air around and then kind of transmit that into the soil. We're testing it out over at a patch of grass at Atascadero Lake Park. Jury's still out, but we'll see how it goes. We don't want to go all in without testing it out someplace. So many of the parks and building grounds have been browned out, and you know, the areas that don't get a lot of foot traffic, we've browned out. Other areas, we've really scaled back the water consumption. We try to keep these areas green. We've also been really keeping a tab on that. So if it seems like we can even cut back a little more, we cut back more. As I mentioned earlier, the CalSense irrigation controllers have been adjusted 70% of the sensor demand. This is really important because that's really where we've gained the most reduction from. Many of our buildings are newer, or the older buildings have been retrofitted with low flush or low flow fixtures, so we can't really, that's kind of a static usage. So, you know, a lot of our best approaches to meeting the mandate have been really through the irrigation of the parks and the building grounds. So here's a picture of one of those. You look a little closer, and there actually are areas that are stressed and are, you know, struggling, but we haven't browned them out completely. They're still alive. They're just, you know, once the rain comes this winter, they'll pop right back to being green. So the recommendation with this item tonight is just to endorse the city's current water conservation efforts that we've been employing the past few months. And if there's any other items that the city council would like us to explore or do differently, I'd love to hear them.
City, and not just what the city staff has done with our facilities, but our community has actually met and exceeded the state standards. I think we were at a 38% reduction as well, and that's with our larger lots on average. And I think what they don't realize in Sacramento, a lot of folks, myself included, are growing a lot of their own food right on their own property. So even with a reduced use of water, we're still have orchards and 4-H animals and a lot of things that have some value that are not really factored in. But we still manage to meet those requirements. That's commendable. Any questions by council? Go ahead. Or comments? We will open it up to the public just for any input.
Thank you, Nick. Very thorough. And I'm curious, the part about the shutoff of the irrigation between the softball fields at Paloma Park, is that not a very heavily trafficked area? Like, that'll pop back, or will we end up doing something else there because we expect the grass to die off permanently?
That's a good question. We'll see if the grass comes back. That's not a real heavily trafficked area. We've also shut it off on the outer banks of the ball field as well, like in the ball outfield and some of those other areas that we don't really manicure as part of the ball field. Mm-hmm. You know, they should pop back as long as, you know, we decided those areas because they don't get a lot of foot traffic. And, you know, as I mentioned in my report, I think I mentioned how if you do let it brown out, like a lot of folks have done in their front yards, as long as it doesn't get a lot of foot traffic or wear and tear, that grass blade will remain attached to the root and it won't be pulled out. At our parks, you know, that's probably one of the biggest questions I get asked is, you know, how come the city is keeping their parks green and I have to let my front yard or backyard go brown? Well, the difference is, you know, we have hundreds of people using our parks every week, and they're using it on a, you know, pretty rough basis if they have soccer or baseball or something like that. And that activity doesn't happen in most people's yards. And so we want people to come and enjoy the parks. So, you know, even though, you know, I've browned out my front yard, I can still go to one of the city parks and, you know, throw a frisbee around or play catch with a dog or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. There is that opportunity for people to come to the city parks and use these facilities, and even if they can't use their own yard in the way they might want to, so I think it's twofold there. They can still use that, and it's going to be used anyway. And like you said, if we let that go, that could cost a whole lot later on. So, okay. And then I guess a similar question with the median landscapes, except the trees. Would we just kind of eventually
watering any of those features in the median?
Okay. Well, I really want to commend you, the city staff, on what we've done to be able to reduce water like this, and to all of you out there at home who are playing your part. You always have been, and you're doing even more and more. So we really appreciate that, and I think we all have a lot to be proud of. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Fonzie.
Thank you. Good report, Nick. One of the questions we get as council members is, why are we continuing to build new buildings, hotels, or whatever they may be, while we're in a drought? Could you answer that for the public, please?
Sure, I can. Not just by happenstance, but by really good planning for many years now. I know our neighbors to the north are in a different basin. You know, one time they thought they had all the water that they'll ever need, and now they're running really short on a lot of water, and they've got moratoriums on some development and other things. But as far as like the hotels and that, it's interesting because I just had this conversation with John Neal, the general manager at Tascadero Mutual Water Company, who would have liked to have been here tonight, but he had a prior commitment, and he's offered to come here in the upcoming month or so and make a report to the council, and I'll coordinate that with Rochelle. But we do have the water supply to be able to accommodate those developments at this point, and we're actively looking at bringing other water sources, such as the Lake Nacimiento project, those supplies into the district as well. I think our appropriation that we're going to be getting from that project is about 2,000 acre feet a year. And Councilmember Fonzie, you probably know better than anybody maybe in this room. I know you do follow.
Utilizes drought-tolerant landscaping and other measures to conserve water when we do build. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you. Any other council questions or comments? I will open it up to the public if anyone would like to comment on this item. And seeing none approach, we'll close that, bring it back. And again, there has been excellent planning over the years by many people. And I'm always amazed if you think about our wastewater treatment plant, if you realize 25% of our water, domestic water supply in our community comes from basically the wastewater treatment plant recirculating into the basin, filtering naturally. And as it turns out, because of that, we have the lowest cost wastewater treatment plant in the county dovetail together, even back from the E.G. Lewis days of even picking a spot that has a sub-basin separated by a fault from another area where it naturally collects the water every time water flows down the Salinas. So a lot of things going in our favor, and the community, as Heather Moreno has mentioned, that really has worked at conservation. So we can be proud of that. And I think do we need a formal motion, Mr. City Attorney, on this, or by consensus, we endorse the city's water conservation efforts?
Let me just quickly check the agenda.
It'd be item C1.
I would recommend a motion. A motion.
I move that the council adopt the draft resolution Council endorses the city's water conservation efforts for its parks and facilities.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Fonzie
Sickets and our enforcement efforts. Hopefully that's why everyone's here tonight.
Hopefully they're all parked legally.
Yes. We'll see if we can get this this going. If not, I'll just get started. Wanted to give you a little bit of background, Mayor and Council. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to make the presentation. Just a little bit of background on the nature of parking sites, parking enforcement, and why we're coming before you tonight. Thank you, Luke. Maybe. Oh. There we are. Excellent. Several years ago, the state legislature decided to move parking enforcement out of the criminal courts and move it into the civil arena. So when I started in law enforcement, if I issued a parking citation, it was a criminal offense, or it was considered a criminal offense. And a couple of years in, all of a sudden I issued parking citations, and it was a civil offense. And so all of our parking citations are handled through the civil process. A fine that's imposed is a civil fine, and any remedies go through any kind of criminal courts over parking fines. And so that changed a lot of the process by which we issue parking citations and by which the state legislature requires us to conduct enforcement, and I'll explain some of that in just a moment. I want to remind you that there is a difference, obviously, between fees and fines. I apologize, that's a little oversimplistic. But this is something that is considered a fine, not a fee. Difference would be that we issue fees for things that people conduct as legal business within the city. If you want to build a building, for instance, you need a building permit, and there's a fee associated with that. We have certain fees at the police department. If you want to come get your car re-registered and you need us to sign off on a VIN verification, there's a fee that goes along with that. It helps to offset the cost of our time and effort and energy in undertaking that. In this case, however, when we issue a parking site, that's a fine. You have broken the law by parking illegally, and there is a fine associated with that. And the main difference in this case, just the distinction that I want us to keep in mind, is that fees are associated with, generally speaking, lawful activity. Fines are generally imposed with unlawful activity. That's an overgenerality, and I apologize for that, but I just want to make sure that we're all kind of on the same page when we're thinking about parking citations and we're thinking about raising the fines for parking citations. We're talking about people who have committed illegal acts and are actually now having to face the penalty for that illegal action. As I said, the legislature changed parking several years ago, and as part of that in action, they have allowed through Vehicle Code Section 4200.5 assess our parking citations. It can be a private entity, or it can be another entity in the county. In our case, we contract with the County of San Luis Obispo to process our parking citations and process the collection of fees associated with those citations. Now, they don't do it for free. Unfortunately, there is surcharge fees associated with their service to us. We pay those fees out of the fines that are issued in the parking violation itself. The reason we do that is because if we were to try and process them ourselves, it would be very time-consuming, and it would be even potentially more costly. It would take away our people from doing their normally assigned duties. And as you know, we run a pretty tight ship around here, and there's not a lot of multiple different entities has a lot more ability to do that. The cost or the charge to us of that processing is $12.50. That's actually three different surcharges combined to add up to $12.50. But we pay for each citation, we pay the county $12.50 to process it. Currently, many of our parking violations that we issue have a bail amount of $10. So when we go out to conduct enforcement for parking violations and we write somebody a ticket for $10, we send the ticket down to the county where it's processed, and they charge us $12.50 to process that. They collect the $10, and we end up, as a city, losing $2.50 on the bargain. So we're actually losing money to write a parking citation rather than collecting the fine that should normally be associated with that parking citation. Also, part of what changed in the legislature's reworking of parking is Section 40203.5, and there are a couple of provisions that I just wanted to make council aware of and the reason that I'm here tonight. First one is a provision that says that the local governing body, that's you guys, are required, it's a shall, to establish what I call a parking bail schedule. It's a schedule for fines that are issued for parking violations. Currently, we don't have an adopted parking bail schedule. Somehow that got overlooked, and we need to make sure that we establish some sort of parking bail schedule so that we can go through with the process of issuing these civil fine parking violations. If we don't have a parking bail schedule, then we need to cease and desist issuing some of our parking citations and parking violations. It's one of the reasons we haven't undertaken very much parking enforcement under my regime, I suppose. The second one is that we have an obligation, also a shin. The section says whenever possible, basically it uses language that says if it's possible, we shall standardize the parking fees by county. The agencies within the county should do their best as I go through my presentation to you. In your packet, you have information, and I wanted to kind of walk through this a little bit. It's a little hard to see on your screens, but it's also attached in your packets. I wanted to kind of explain how we came to our parking bail schedule and how we came to recommend this to you. I'll let you know about one minor correction. And if you look at the top where it says violation, and then as you go across from left to right, Atascadero penalty, San Luis Obispo, Paso Robles, then it says average of the two highest on the screen. That's not what it says in your packet. Somehow something got a little bit flipped in your packets, and it says average of San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles. That is not what we did. So let me explain further. We looked at what Atascadero currently has for its penalty for the fine. We looked at San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles, the two agencies closest to our own. And out of the three of them, we figured which are the two highest of those, and we then computed the average of the two highest. So if you look at the top line, Atascadero is 76, San Luis is 116, and Paso Robles is 151 for a fire lane violation. The two highest are San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles. We took the average of those, and we came to $133. That resulted in a difference of $57 from our current charged penalty or fine. And then we used that to propose what our new fine would be. So in this case, the average was $133 between the two highest, and we are proposing a fine just slightly less of $125. So again, we won't be the lowest, but we won't be the highest between the two highest. If you look down through the list, you'll notice that there are a couple of instances where, in this case, one instance, the handicap parking, where our current fee is $675. It's almost double what others around the county are charging. And so in that instance, what we're looking at doing is reducing the overall amount of our parking fee by $169 to $285. So we did not go up in every single case, but in many of the cases, you'll see that we are requesting an increase. The significant ones that I want you to note are the upper left, the second and third violations, the no parking zone and the overtime parking. Those are some of the more common complaints that we respond to, people parking in no parking zones and then people being parked too long, especially in our downtown corridor. That's where most of the parking complaints that we get come from, down on Entrada and in our downtown corridor. Those are two that, as you can tell, have current fines associated with them of $10. Again, it actually costs us money to issue that citation if we choose to do that in this case. In both cases, we're simply requesting that those fees, the amounts, the fines, be increased to reflect something more appropriate and more in keeping with what the other agencies or entities in the county are doing, $30 and $40. And so you have also before you our proposed parking bail schedule. As I was looking through this just prior to coming in, I did notice that there was one mistake on the parking bail schedule that is different from what we proposed on the page prior. If you look at parking wrong way on the page prior, we are proposing a fine there of $55, And then if you look at the actual parking bill schedule, that violation, wrong way parking, is listed at $35. And that should actually say $55 rather than $35. So that is a mistake that I just caught prior to coming before council tonight. The others should be right. The violations, you can see, are separated into vehicle code sections and Atascadero municipal code sections. And I want to point that out to you because it becomes important when I'm going to show you the next slide. We do issue violations for both sections of the California Vehicle Code, the state guide, and we issue violations or parking citations for violations of our municipal code, our own city guide. You'll notice that there is a significant difference in some areas of the cost of fees associated with those. Again, most of that is because the sections for the vehicle code are criminal in nature typically, and if we're issuing a parking citation for that violation, it, you know, is a civil infraction but still has with it or carries with it the bail schedule that would be part of the county bail schedule. So I believe that some of the violations are much higher than they would normally be simply because we're trying to figure out the average in the county, and I'll show you on the next slide what that kind of looks like. It's also very difficult to come up with an appropriate parking bail schedule when you're looking at other agencies and jurisdictions, and let me show you on this slide what I mean. It's a little easier to see. It's very easy if you're dealing with apples and apples, and we can kind of figure it out. Everything looks the same and everything sounds the same. In this case, we're dealing with apples and oranges and bananas. And by that, I mean that there is no two parking bail schedules that are going to look the exact same. For instance, one city may have a parking bail schedule where they have a municipal code for just about every violation you could have. And so some of the fees associated with the particular violation, some of the fines associated with those violations are going to be listed in their municipal code as opposed to the vehicle code. So we look at our code and what fines we're issuing, and we see one of the sections of the vehicle code, and now I go to the other agencies and I try and look for that same thing in their bail schedule, and I can't find it because they're using a municipal code for that violation. So their fine is associated with something different than our fine is associated with. So when you look at the agencies around the county, the different jurisdictions, it is nearly impossible to find two fines that are kind of the exact same violation. I've done my best to highlight several of them for you tonight and give you some to look at. I also kind of urge caution in trying to look at other jurisdictions to determine what's best for the city of Atascadero. One of the things I'm fond of pointing out to people is this is an open container town. You can walk around with an open container of beer in Atascadero if you want to. You cannot do that in any other jurisdiction in the county. So if we want to be like every other jurisdiction in the county, then we're going to come before you with an open container municipal code and have you pass that. And I've heard that that's not a very welcome prospect. So we're different. We're unique. We have our own way of doing things. And so I urge a little bit of caution in just trying to look at other jurisdictions to say, should we be like them or not? However, in this particular case, we do have that section of the vehicle code that says we'll do our best to try and standardize fines for parking violations throughout the county. If you look at the slide I have before you, I've tried to pick out some of the sections and say these are as identical as we can get. You'll notice there's an asterisk under the fire lane column in Grover Beach because, again, that's one I just couldn't find the exact same section in their parking bill schedule. You'll notice that a couple of jurisdictions, like Grover Beach, it says 53, 53, 53. There are some jurisdictions that kind of picked an amount, $54, $53, in one case $35, and that is kind of a standard parking fine that goes along with a multitude of their municipal codes and similar to what we're proposing kind of as an other. We have an amount that we are recommending that the council approve to charge as kind of an other, a catch-all. In this case, a city like Grover Beach has that catch-all amount just listed for almost every single one of their fines. In other cases, you can see a wide variety, and what I've done for you in the top column for Atascadero is I've indicated what our current fine is. So for no parking, our current fine is $10. And as you go down the list, you can see that we are at the very low end of the scale throughout the county for that violation. We're recommending an increase in the parking bill schedule to a $40 fine. And that brings us to, again, a good median, an average, if you look at the other agencies on that list. If you go all the way to the far side, the handicap parking, you notice that our current fine is $675. We are way out of line with what the other agencies in the county were doing. And so bringing us down to $285, again, brings us to kind of a median within the county. Now, I also encourage caution in looking at a specific fine, and you might say, well, my goodness, no parking, Pismo Beach only charges $20. Well, Pismo Beach may charge in a weekend that $20 fine to hundreds of people because you have a series of violations, maybe the car show weekend, and they have people whose dedicated purpose it is to go out and write parking tickets. And so it's not just $20 they're getting, it's 20 times 100 that they're getting. We, on the other hand, do not have parking enforcement officers like San Luis Obispo or Pismo Beach. We are only complaint-driven in the city of Atascadero. We only respond to complaints from our residents for the most part. There are occasions when we would take enforcement otherwise, but by and large, that's what we do. And when we respond, most often what you find is that we try our best to contact owners and get cars moved, and we don't issue a lot of citations. In Entrada, for instance, just yesterday, we issued a large number of warnings to people for being parked there over the amount of time. That's common with the city of Atascadero. That's kind of how we do business because we're a different kind of community than San Luis Obispo or Pismo Beach. And so, again, trying to say, well, you know, our fine is $40 and theirs is $20 doesn't really make a lot of sense because you're again, comparing apples to oranges. What we've done is just tried the very best that we could. And Sergeant Davis for our traffic division really has done the lion's share of work on this. And he's tried to look at the two entities, Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo, that are closest to ours. He's tried to take a real good look at, okay, what's the average? What are we looking at? Are we within kind of these parameters? And he's come up with a parking bill schedule, I think, that does as good a job as we can of addressing some of the, you know, more concerning issues that we have. For instance, you can see on this list, parking blocking wheelchair access. That's more of a serious violation. We want to be accessible friendly in our community, and we want to make sure that we don't have people blocking our roadways so that someone with a wheelchair isn't going to be able to get onto a safe path of travel. And so that's a larger fine. But for some of the other fines, you'll notice that we're, you know, $25, $35. We're trying to be reasonable in the implementation of those fines so that we're not overly taxing our people. And I think $35 is a reasonable fine given the fact that we have, you know, $12.50 kind of sliced right off of the top of that. We want to also have a fee schedule that ensures that people are going to obey the law. If you don't ever issue a parking citation in the city of Atascadero, I can guarantee you that word gets out. People are just going to park wherever they want. We get a number of calls for service complaining about parking violations, most of them in our downtown corridor areas. The reason we get those complaints is because the business owners are looking for their customers to have a place to park their vehicles so they can go in and utilize those services. And if somebody comes who maybe is a resident in the area or parks and just leaves their car there for days on end, then people who actually want to come and use that business service are not able to utilize that space. And so it's a legitimate call for service. It's one that we take seriously, and I totally understand where people are coming from. As I've said before, we do issue a lot of warnings. And we've done, over the last 2 years, a number of different instances where we've gone out and issued a large number of warnings to vehicles that park along our downtown corridors to try and remind people that they shouldn't be parking there in violation of the time limit. And so we are very good about that. You'd be surprised at the reaction we get from some people for issuing a warning, but that is a, kind of a practice that that we take very seriously because, again, this is a Tascadero. We want to do our job just a little bit differently. And then I will say that occasionally and eventually we do, as I said, have to issue citations. We are going to, at some point in time, have to put a parking ticket on somebody's window. It's never fun. Nobody ever likes it. I never like it. Got one when I was in Hawaii not too long ago. They are far more expensive than the ones we are proposing. But I was wrong. I paid it and moved on. So occasionally people are going to get citations. It's not pleasant. But we do want to remind people that if you park right, and we have done a great job as a community of making parking available to the people who want to use our downtown corridor. We've designated areas for parking, put up crosswalks and lighting to make sure that people can get from their parking safely to the areas where they want to shop and do business. So we've done a great job of doing our part, and we just want to make sure that our residents are doing their part as well. There are a couple of alternatives for you. The first one is just to adopt the parking bail schedule as it's recommended to you. And again, I'll remind you that we're going to ask that you adopt it with that one correction of $55 instead of $35 for the wrong way parking. But we would ask that you adopt the recommended parking bail schedule. You can also come back to me for parking bail schedule. I would recommend against it because it is, again, a requirement that we shall do this pursuant to the vehicle code. If you choose not to, I would say that at this point, what that means for the police department is that we, you know, really should not be out issuing parking citations. We won't be conducting parking enforcement if we don't have a parking bail schedule that's been adopted by council pursuant to the law. Otherwise, I think we would be held responsible for that. So, from there. So, any questions from council, please.
Thank you. I have had a request for a break. I think we can make it through this item, and then we will take a short break. But I'll go
Thank
ahead
you.
With some council
Mr.
questions.
Mayor,
yes.
Your mic is cutting out. Is it possible you can move it a little closer to your mouth? I'm having a hard time hearing you from time to time. Thank you, sir.
How about that?
That is perfect. Thank you very much.
Fortunately, we don't have a fine for mic inappropriate positioning. But I appreciate the warning. We'll go ahead with some council questions. First, Councilwoman Fonzie, followed by Councilman Kelly.
Thank you. Well, we may not have one for mics, but we have one for parking on the railroad tracks. I thought, that's got to be a self-punishment, isn't it?
Well, I was going to say something about stupidity, and I won't. A lot of people believe that railroad tracks aren't used. And so they park on railroad tracks, and I've seen a number of videos in my law enforcement career where cars are literally demolished into little bits and pieces. There are a number of violations that you could potentially use for somebody being on the railroad tracks, one of which is trespassing on railroad property. But yes, that occasionally does happen. It's infrequent, but since we do have railroad tracks that go through town, it could come up. Again, there are some violations that are used so infrequently that I'll be, quite honestly, I'll be surprised if we use that violation during my tenure here. It's just not something we do on a regular basis, but we want to have the option just to the county. So if you go on the county website and you look for the bail schedule, parking fines are listed on the bail schedule as well. And you can go down and you can see what Grover Beach charges, for instance, for their some of their parking violations. Not all of them are listed on there, but a number of them are, and it's one of the things that I think the agencies in the county are going to need to do a little bit of a better job of is standardizing some of this. I was talking with the Morro Bay Chief of Police, and she's also in the process of going through and trying to adopt a parking bail schedule. Again, it is a fine that is associated with that. The bail is not something that we're using as it's customary, where you go to jail and you get bailed out. It simply is the fine that is attached to that parking violation. So,
thank you.
Councilman Kelly.
Yes, not too long ago, a couple months ago, there was some articles in the newspaper regarding the cost of fines for traffic violations. And I think, as an example, my numbers may be off, but the mechanics are there. It's like if you went through a stop sign, the actual fine was $120. But by the time the county got done adding on, there was a high number of other fees that brought it up to $300 or so. Is that something that can happen to this once we send it to the county and it's a $35 parking ticket? By the time they get done with it, it's $100 or $150?
No, and I talked to somebody just today. It's funny you should mention that. I was getting a sandwich at lunch, and somebody had gotten a stop sign ticket. They were complaining that it was three. That's the fine that's set by council. The monies that the counties charge us for processing the violation to pay your citation, there is, and you'll see this on the bail schedule as well, there is an increased fine that gets attached to that. Again, it's part of the process of going, now we have to go and try and collect this amount, and there is additional processing that takes place. And so there is, for all fines, if you fail to pay it, there is an increased amount. And I think we've listed $30 on, I'm trying to remember the exact amount that we listed. I'm going to look it up real quick so I don't get it wrong. Yeah, we've listed $30 as that increase if you fail to pay the fine by the time that it's due.
Okay, I was just a little bit concerned that this thing could grow once it goes over the hill.
Unless council changes our fee schedule, we're not allowed to charge anymore, and the county's not allowed to charge anymore either. They are simply processing it on our behalf. They don't have a hand in how much comes out of it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? We'll open it up to the public if anyone would like to comment on this item. Seeing no one rush to the lectern, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council for discussion or a motion. I did want to ask the chief, however, we do have a policy that we have implemented full cost recovery. We think that if we're going to do an activity, we ought to at least break even on the costs associated. I certainly could guess that a $10 parking ticket we were losing money on. I'm sure of that. But I would think that many of these citations or tickets are still probably at an amount that does not cover your processing time or any of staff time. And is that something to consider in looking at these fees?
Again,
or fines?
Yeah. It's a little easier with fees to go through the process of looking at full cost recovery because we're paying for the time of what we're doing. The thing I would ask council to remember that this is enforcement. If I go out and arrest somebody for petty theft, the fines that are associated with that charge really are not implemented to give me some payment back for the job that my police officers did. It's a penalty assessment. And in this case, this fine is a penalty assessment. Certainly we could go through and look at, you know, exactly how much time it takes to do some of these processing of the parking sites and sending them down. I think we start really walking on some thin. This is a fine associated with to go out there and take this enforcement action. And maybe the city manager would want to address that differently, but that would be my personal concern. We just be very careful about doing that with a fine that's associated with some sort of enforcement action on the police department's part.
Well, currently our parking fine would be less than some cities would charge just for parking.
That's correct.
So it's
if you've been anywhere locally, you've experienced that, and you are correct. I know the city of Pismo Beach has just undertaken an initiative to increase a lot of the amounts for parking in some of their areas. So, you know, definitely we have it nice here in Atascadero. We park for free as long as we park legally.
So we won't fine you much, and we won't have...
Please thank the sergeant for his work in putting all this together. That had to have been a bit tedious.
Certainly was.
I'm curious, do individuals who are fined pay the fine to the county, and the county sends us the difference? Is that how that works?
Yes. So
okay.
They do all of the processing, and then... Our staff has to, on I think twice a month, make a deposit to a fund, and so there's, you know, a lot of processing that we go through as well. But yes, the amounts of money are remitted to the county, and then the county forwards that to us, and then we make a deposit, and there's a provision for that per the vehicle code. And
when you say a deposit, what do you mean just depositing the money that we get from the county?
Right.
Okay.
We are required to put money on a deposit per the vehicle code based on the number of citations we issued and some other, again, provisions of that code that are a little beyond my expertise, and I don't even want to put the finance department on the spot right now to ask her if she knows all about it, because I know she doesn't. But there is a process that we have to go through to make a deposit of any fines that we receive from the county and do it in a certain amount of time. So it is a processing on our part as well, but the monies are sent to the county.
Except for perhaps the fire hydrant, much of Atascadero doesn't have a curb that you can red curb. And I'm wondering, do we run into any problems typically with people parking and they don't know better at a fire hydrant? Obviously, it's a place that we need to protect and have that open.
So there are about four different applicable sections that deal with fire hydrants. It was one of those sections that I really had to look through all of the different bail schedules from the different agencies to figure out, okay, what matches. Again, apples to apples. So there are a number of different sections potentially used. Some of them say you can't park within 15 feet of any fire hydrant. Some of them say you can't park in a red zone in front of a fire hydrant. So it makes it a very easy visual for us to see, okay, I can't park there. Even if the curb is not painted red, though, this particular section says you're still not allowed to park within 15 feet of that fire hydrant, because we know from experience, and the fire department can attest to this, that when we're going to fight a fire, I need that amount of space to be able to get in there, hook up my hoses, and work safely. And so the section in particular here that's listed says you can't park within 15 feet of any fire hydrant. There are other sections that say you can't block a fire hydrant. There are sections from the Uniform Fire Code, for instance, sections from the Vehicle Code, and then sections from municipal codes in other jurisdictions that are curbs and gutters. In those rural areas where fire danger is higher, the potential for disaster from fire is higher, we want to maintain clearance around those hydrants so that our fire personnel can get there and do their job quickly and safely, and we don't have areas of town burned down. And, you know, we've just experienced that locally in Santa Margarita, and it really highlights the danger we face in our community, the rural characteristic of our community. And so that's why that one's a little bit of a higher fine.
Well, not nearly as high as the handicapped, and it seems to be almost as important to me.
Between the bail schedule, and what you're adopting is the bail schedule. Let me bring that back up. So this comparison here is not what you're adopting. This comparison is not what you're adopting. The bail schedule is this one, the proposed City of Atascadero parking bail schedule. And that's the one I think you were just looking at, Councilwoman Fonzi, to get that amount for the fire hydrant. But we just want to make it real clear so that there's no miscommunication that this particular list here is the actual thing that council will be adopting, again, with one minor provision, and that is that the section for wrong-way parking should say 55 and not 35.
Thank you. Councilman Kelly.
I'd just like to make a motion if there's no other questions.
Well, let's see if there's any other council.
Maybe make a comment. I appreciate your fairness on approaching this situation without being overly aggressive. I don't know where around here, but there are jurisdictions where situations, there's a tow truck that's accompanied
yes.
by that violation. So
yes, there is.
That's taken care of.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Councilman Kelly.
Ready for the motion? Fine. That the council adopt the draft resolution amending the parking violation bail schedule and setting the penalties for parking law offenses, with the noted correction of the wrong way parking fee to be $55. Was it 55? 55 instead of the 35 indicated.
Second. We have a motion by Councilman Kelly, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We will take a aim for a 5-minute break, and assuming there's a clear shot to the restrooms for some of the council members, we can keep to that. Thank you. I can't imagine. Work our way back to council meeting here. Good evening, and I would ask if everyone could take their seats. We'll continue our meeting. Next item on the agenda is council announcements and reports. We usually divide that into two categories of council announcements or reports about activities we may be involved in. Then we go into committee reports. We will try to keep that separate. On some occasion, as we have this evening, there's an item that's brought by council members for consideration. And as most of you may understand, we aren't able to talk with each other outside of a public forum. We can certainly get two or fewer, which would be one, and talk with staff about a various topic, but we cannot have a majority get together and reach any kind of an action outside of a public process. And if we do receive any input, any meetings we might have that impact our decision making, we disclose that at a public meeting. So with that, a number of us have received correspondence from members of the public about a number of items. One that has, I think, been frustrating to many because it's so complicated and it deals with a fairly old project. And what Councilwoman Fonzie and myself felt like, as two of us that have been on council for some time and had reviewed this, we wanted to have more public process and just kind of discuss a particular item a little more in depth. And if there's consensus by the council, then we could schedule this for a future hearing, and then we would have a full staff report public notice and some more discussion. So we aren't really going to take action tonight. This is just an opportunity for Councilwoman Fonzie and I to bring something before the council, and we'll get a little bit of input from staff, and we'll see if the council would like to look at this particular topic a little bit more in depth. I've asked our city attorney to give some background on this item, where it came from, and what is possibly before us. And then Councilman Fonzie will make some suggestions that the council could consider. With that, I'll turn it over to our city attorney. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This item involves number 286. That was adopted on March 14th of 1995. And that was an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance text and map to establish the planned development overlay zone number 11. It's been codified in the city's municipal code as PD 11. And within that PD 11, there are a number of conditions of approval in connection with the project. Those conditions of approval come from a number of sources, including the planning division, fire department, engineering division, and within the engineering division there were various conditions of approval with respect to road improvements, both in general as well as on-site and off-site road improvements. We were asked to review the CCNRs in connection with a review. I've also consulted with the city manager on this, and what we start with is the CCNRs, which were approved in 1995. When those were approved, there was an amendment process within the CCNRs which set forth how the CCNRs could be amended. So you begin with looking to the CCNRs themselves to determine what the amendment process is. One of the questions that's been asked is whether or not the city could adopt a policy that would allow for the city to require either for those CCNRs to be amended or to change the amendment process. And in order for the city to take such action, there has to be a legal authority for it. You are a general law city in Atascadero as opposed to a charter city. So you take your authority from state law and as well as from the Constitution with those approvals. So the issue that's before you this evening is whether or not, based upon the concerns that the residents have expressed, the city wishes to have a further, city council wishes to have a further review of this matter to be conducted by staff and presented to you at a future city council meeting to further address the concerns that have been brought forth by the residents. So that's a basic overview of the circumstances under which we find ourselves this evening. As you mentioned, Your Honor, this is not an action item. It is intended to be a discussion item. The discussion should be whether or not, based on the information you are provided, this is something that you wish to have scheduled at a future meeting, which would involve, as you know, a staff report that would include further discussion and analysis of the issue. So I'm prepared to answer any questions on the background if you have them.
Can you clarify of what is under the council's jurisdiction in terms of anything in relation to the conditions of approval or the CCNRs or the amendment process itself?
Yes, I can do that. I have reviewed the CCNRs and the amendments to the CCNRs, and there is a section in the CCNRs, namely, it's found in Article 9, excuse me, I misspoke, Article 7, Section 2, it's at page 21, and it refers to approval of city being required for certain amendments to the CCNRs. And let me just read the two sentences here. The first sentence reads, no amendments, deletions, revocation, and or additions to these CCNRs specifically and directly related to conditions of approval shall be effective unless previously approved in writing by the city acting by and through its duly authorized officers, agents, and or representatives. The section continues, the provisions herein that require prior approval of the city are the following, and then they cite to four different articles. Article 3 is use restrictions. Article 5 is architectural design and construction standards. Article 6 is nuisance enforcement, and Article 7 is the amendment process itself. So that is what the CCNRs provide in terms of the city's role in connection with the CCNRs and amendments to them.
And could you elaborate in terms of if either the council or city staff review any items, and is it under the city's jurisdiction to change anything within these documents?
Well, the city's jurisdiction is to review them to make sure that they are, if there's an amendment being proposed to the CCNRs, to make sure that they are consistent with the conditions of approval that were issued in connection with that project. You recall from my earlier comments when I mentioned the conditions of approval that are included in PD 11 that come from planning and engineering and fire department. We want to make sure that the amendments to the CCNRs don't conflict with the conditions of approval, because when you approved this project some 20 years ago now, it was approved with certain conditions, and those conditions continue to exist even with the passage of time.
So then the conditions of approval cannot be changed. Any modifications or amendments, the jurisdiction of the city is to confirm that they are consistent with those original conditions of approval.
Yes, that's the role of the city in connection with the initial review of the...
For the explanation, Brian, I appreciate that. The reason this came up and is being discussed tonight, and as Tom said, we can't talk about this with various members of the council because it would be a violation of the Brown Act. But I've received calls from several of the people that are in this audience tonight and have met with several regarding, in particular, Oak Ridge Estates. And it could apply to other developments that had CCNRs as well. But let's just take Oak Ridge Estates. And what happened was the project was approved in 1995, more than 20 years ago, with certain conditions of approval, including road maintenance. And the terms of that road maintenance would be split between all of the property owners, but as it turns out on this particular development, the majority of the property is owned by the developer and the homeowners are the minority. But the city approved subdivision, it says in the CCNRs that certain amendments require city approval. And as Mayor O'Malley was saying, that we want to make sure that they're consistent with the conditions are key. We're not talking about CCNRs where they raise the rates on a certain homeowners association with a condo, or whether they cover the roof or the insurance or the landscaping. This is something particularly cued in by conditions of approval that affect the CCNRs. So my concern is that I would like to make sure that the process that is handled by the city is open, and that those that are involved in this process for the CCNR changes and possible changes in the amount that those homeowners would pay is seen in the public eye. And so I'm bringing this back and asking the members of the council to think about this administrative procedure, which hasn't necessarily been thought about in the past.
Association, where now there would be something of that nature that would have some input. Now, I think my concern on this is to ensure we have a public process, and I think we've always tried to err on the side. Goodness, we've had Walmart hearings till 2 in the morning. We have always gone the extra mile to make sure there's as much public process as you can on any time where there's just something that's difficult to understand, or there just may be other issues to consider, because that's how you get more input. And I think in this case, there's some discretion in terms of how that process occurs. I think it's been in the past something that's been delegated to staff to review administratively, and in some narrow situations, as Councilwoman Fonsi has pointed out, it may be something that the council inserts itself and says, let's have this process crafted that would look at a case such as we have before us, where it's very unique, that we might want to look at future amendments that's reviewed at a council level rather than a staff. I think if in the future something similar came before us, we would probably do it differently now anyway, because you would not have something that didn't have other built-in review processes, such as a homeowners association or something.
Mr. Mayor, yes. I was going to suggest, if there's not any more questions of staff on this, you might want to open it up and let the public comment.
Thank you. And we will go ahead, and first let me see if council has any other council members have a question for us or staff, and then we will open it up to the public. Is that permissible, Mr. City Attorney?
Yeah, yes.
Thank you. Go ahead, Councilman Kelly.
Yes, Brian. Well, first of all, I happen to be a real estate broker, and I've dealt with CC&Rs probably for the last 35 years with development. So I've been of control of making these amendments and what have you, because he's the primary property owner. And then usually after over 50% of the properties have been sold, that transfers the majority vote over to the property owners. And if I'm correct, I think all of the CC&Rs are really only enforceable if you have a homeowners association or if it becomes a civil matter. Could you kind of address that and explain how that really works?
Invoke these CC&Rs. After the first conveyance of a parcel, these CC&Rs shall be amended by upon the written approval of the then record owners of at least 51% of the parcels, or B, revoked only upon written approval of the then record of owners of at least 66 2/3% of the parcels. So you are correct that it is a 51% vote, and my understanding of the situation here is that that was what occurred here.
And then in the process, when a developer comes to the city, and part of the conditions are to have the CC&Rs, and these are usually drawn up by an attorney, and they're usually pretty much about the same with the 51%, and then they're approved by the Department of Real Estate. And since they're approved by the Department of Real Estate and it's actually a real estate matter, where would the authority come for the city to get in and modify or address the amendment on these CC&Rs? And would that require it to go back to the Department of Real Estate for approval? That would add
government. But and by the
way, I'll say is it won't be quick.
They've changed their name to the Bureau of Real Estate. Not quite sure why, but let me go back to answer that question to Article 7, Section 2, which I quoted from previously, where it said that no amendments, deletions, revocation, and or additions to these CC&Rs specifically and directly related to conditions of approval granted by the City of Atascadero shall be effective unless previously approved in writing by the city, CC&Rs that require prior city approval. In connection with your, in response to your question, where it says city, acting by and through authorized officers and agents, the city council, and this is something we would have to look at and report back to you on, but one of the ideas that we had was that we might be able to take action to specify that the city is council is directing that any such amendments be submitted to the city that would then need to go to the city council for approval within the scope of the Section 2, rather than just leave it as city, because this is always something that comes up when you're talking about, you see it in ordinances, I see it in state statutes, and it's always a question, when it says city, does that mean the city staff? Does that mean city manager? Does that mean the city council? Obviously, when all these CC&Rs and state statutes were written, if they had to deal with what we need to deal with, they probably would have used more precise language. But here it says city. And I'm, one of the things I'm going to could look at, if you wish to bring it back, is whether or not we could clarify that for this approval that were issued by the city.
Where would the legal aspect come into where if the developer came in and wanted to make a change and the city council overruled him, but if you go back into the CC&Rs and you have that 51% power play, who would win?
Well, it depends. I know that's probably not the answer you wanted to hear, but it will depend upon what the proposed amendment is and whether it's within the scope of Section 2 of the amendments that that amendment, and you would compare it to the conditions of approval to see whether or not the amendment is consistent with those conditions of approval.
Just one more question. Under the problem that we're discussing tonight with the payment of the road fees and everything else, does that fall under one of these four parts in that article section 7.2, section 2?
It doesn't appear to me that it does. The four sections are the use restrictions, and that's article 3. Section 1 is the prohibition on further subdivision. Section 2 is single family use only, and section 18 is open space. Article 5 is the architectural design and constructional standards, and that deals with architecture and design. Then Article 6 is the nuisance and enforcement. That's the right of the city to enforce its nuisance laws. And then the final amendment would be any amendment that tried to change the amendment process.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next would be Councilman Sturdivant, followed by Councilwoman Moreno.
So, Brian, just in this Oakridge Estates instance, if we had it come back to this, how would that change the circumstance? How would that have changed this where we are and why we're talking about this?
Well, the amendment that was previously approved by the developer was one which was approved under the provisions of the CC&Rs in terms of what amendments they were had the voting power to approve. And so without having voting power to outvote the developer, then the developer had the authority to make the amendments under Article 7 of the CC&Rs.
It isn't our responsibility to make certain that the CC&Rs fit the conditions of approval and not the real estate, the interactions between the owners of the homes and the developer?
The city's responsibility is to make sure that the proposed amendment to the CC&Rs is consistent with the conditions of approval. And there's nothing that I'm aware of in the amendment to the CC&Rs that was made that is inconsistent with the conditions of approval.
And that's what I'm trying to, you know, figure out in this situation is that the conditions of approval were upheld, and it was a circumstance where we don't have the legal authority at this time to change something that was already conditions of approval already met. So I'm just trying to look for some clarification as to what exactly would be different.
My understanding is that some of the homeowners are seeking to have the city take whatever action can be taken by the city to have further involvement by the city in the CC&R amendment process. To the extent that it could be, for example, brought before the city council in connection with future amendments to the CC&Rs, rather than approved as an administrative approval.
But even in that process, we don't have all the say or all the legality in that, do we? There's only a
hypothetically that you were to take some action in a future council meeting to require that proposed amendments be presented to you. Then when it comes to you, there'd presumably be a staff report and copies of the appropriate documents would be presented to you, and then someone would address the council in presenting that staff report. And then you would need to make a decision as to whether or not to approve that CC&R amendment. And the scope of that authority would be to check to make sure that that CC&R amendment is consistent with the conditions of approval.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Brian, I'm sure you feel like you've said this 27 times already. My understanding, based on what you've said and based on our previous conversations, is that our scope is the conditions of approval, and it does not sound like financial responsibility for roads fall under those conditions of approval.
That's right. Prior amendments to the CCNRs, because those have been amended, what you could possibly do, which I'll, if that's your direction, review, is to clarify that the council wishes to be the body that makes the decision on future amendments to the CCNRs within the scope of Section 2.
But that all sticks within the conditions of approval, which have nothing to do with financial responsibility for roads.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor,
thank
if
you.
I could just try and clarify
well, I had
just
a,
for a second.
Was clarification, but I'll go ahead if you'd like, and I'll follow up.
Okay, I apologize. I just want to make sure what the proposal that Councilmember Fonzie is doing is saying, hey, rather than have that approval process right now, those any amendments to the CCNRs come into staff. We look at the original conditions of approval and say, is there anything in these amendments that are inconsistent with the conditions of approval that were adopted? If there is nothing inconsistent with that, with those conditions, then we go ahead and approve it and record it. What Councilmember Fonzie is proposing is that we bring that to council. Council would have the same authority that staff currently has right now, is they would have the authority to look at it for consistency with the conditions of approval as adopted in 1995 and decide whether it was consistent with those conditions of approval. And I'm sure Brian at the time would ask you to list why it was, what part you found inconsistent. So that's the proposal, if I understand that correctly, Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes, I'm trying to change the process. It's not that we would have the ability to say, yes, this is a good CCNR change or a bad one. More, I feel that the homeowners that were up in Oak Ridge and Estates in particular were blindsided with something that didn't really come out. It was done by staff, which was legal, but we didn't really know about it as a council. We weren't aware that this was coming. And so had we been able to see this and had this as a public hearing process, possibly, or more out in the public eye, it would have been something that could have been discussed between the homeowners and the developer a little more fully. And so the process is really what I'm talking about. I realize that they are the voters on the CCNRs. We don't want to get into the vote on that one. What we're trying to say is because the law says certain amendments require city approval. This is where we come in, that we can have those certain amendments requiring city approval heard in the city arena.
We have a number of council comments. Councilman Kelly?
Yes, just out of curiosity, over the years, I noticed that most CCNRs have a lifespan of 20 to 25 years unless they're renewed. And most of the older projects on the west side, since they got built out in a pretty respectable time, they just kind of died and disappeared. And I noticed you mentioned earlier that this was approved in 1995. Do you know what the lifespan is on the CCNRs?
Let me look here. Of 20 years from the date the CCNRs is recorded, after which time the CCNRs shall automatically extend for successive periods of 25 years unless an instrument executed by the declarant or its representative's heirs shall be recorded canceling and terminating the CCNRs, subject to prior city approval as required by Section 2. So the answer is there's automatic 25-year extensions unless the CCNRs are terminated.
Would a recorded document have to go along with that, or is it just happens?
Yes, shall be recorded.
Okay. So, okay.
Councilman Moreno.
So I guess I'd be asking Councilmember Fonzie, when we're talking, the issue that they've been blindsided by is the financial redistribution. And so what you're saying is, even if that's not in the conditions of approval, that it's allowing an open airing of the issue, whether or not we have jurisdiction over that particular issue. Is that what you're saying?
Let me, if I may, inject, because this is, I think there's two values to the proposal by Councilman Fonzie. And again, however you look at what is being asked of the city, you know, the fact is the developer's attorney brought this to the city. You can debate whether roads are in under one paragraph or they're out under another paragraph. The fact is the developer's attorney brought it to the city and asked for review and approval of these amendments. What I'm suggesting is that if something is brought to the city for review and approval, there may be some cases where we wanted to look at it at a council level rather than a staff level. That's what Councilman Fonzie is proposing. The value of that, even though we may have a lot of folks in a closed setting trying to come up with a solution, I think it's also valuable. Of course, we recognize that we don't want council involved with every minor little change in a homeowners association changing the landscape plan. But I think we're talking about serious, significant changes that can be defined by staff. And I think it's good for council to be involved at that level from a policy standpoint, because I know there's many things I thought was a great idea. I was an advocate for pocket parks at one time. With practice, we learned that that was actually not a good economic decision for the city. We learned that through practical observation of projects. There's a number of things we've looked at from inclusionary housing to any number of topics where it seemed like the best policy at the time. 20 years later, maybe it's not the best policy anymore, and we might learn from the experience of others that would help us in a future development maybe come up with better policy. I don't know. But I think it's a good experience for council, but my fundamental issue, did I agree? Anything to that, Councilman Fonzie? Please do.
I think perhaps this hits me personally more than perhaps others on the council, because I sympathize with those in Oak Ridge Estates, that there are a very few number of houses there that are taking care of the vast amount of cost for the roads. I don't think that was what the council originally intended when they approved those CCNRs, and that the conditions of approval. They saw a subdivision with over 100 houses that would be built in a fairly timely manner, and the cost would be shared equitably among those homeowners. What we see is not what we probably would have envisioned at that time. So I think the thought of it being consistent is actually very timely, that it may not be consistent with what the council had needed for those that are caught in this type of a situation. That if a homeowner has tremendous fees for road improvements, it makes it so their house cannot be sold, because there will not be a buyer that will take on those responsibilities for road maintenance, which takes away the material value of their home. And we, as a council, need to protect our citizens as much as we can from those types of situations. So I think putting it in the public eye is always the best way of doing business. I like to have our government open as much as we can. Although it may still pass with the developer taking the majority vote, we've had a good hearing. Those that are thinking of buying there will know what it is. Those who live there will know what they got and how they got there, and it will not be hidden and swept under the rug. That as a council, I want us to be open about this particular item, because we did approve this subdivision, even though this council in particular was not here in 1995, had nothing to do with it, and it were brought to us today, things would be different. But this is the situation we find ourselves in. So I'm just trying to open this up and not leave it so that those who are buying those homes are in the dark, and those that live in those homes are feeling that they're not protected.
And before we go on, this is an issue that, again, it's not an item that we're up for voting on here. We are probably getting into a little bit of detail. We'll continue with council questions. It would be better to orient towards questions of either Councilman Fonzie or myself or staff, because I would like to get there's no decision can be made. So with that, again, I'd ask to focus on questions or help in any clarifications rather than deliberation at this point, but we'll allow some latitude. And then I'd like to get to the public, and then we'll come back for final deliberation. So we have a number of lights up, which means we'll hear from Councilman Sturdivant, followed by Councilman Kelly, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno. Thank you. Go ahead, Councilman Sturdivant.
My question is for Brian. So, Brian, in this circumstance, financially, with the amendment already being, it's already been approved. We've already said that the conditions of approval met the amendment met the conditions of approval. There would be no financial change or no
recommendation is on that for us to get into that level of detail. That if you want for that discussion to be included in the upcoming report that we would prepare for you, that'd probably be best addressed at that time.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. We're having a few little technical difficulties up here. After Councilman Sturdivant, we'll go to Councilman Kelly.
Required. In this circumstance, I wish there were something involved there. I think a procedure could be put together possibly where a majority of the property owners have to approve to bring it to the city, just so in case you get one troublemaker up there, he's not coming down here every week. We've gone through that. And also, you know, I want to kind of turn the clock back. There's been some extenuating circumstances with this project also. There was the Highway 41 turnoff that became a big issue, and actually the city shut the project down. And at one time I did some research on that, and you know, in my opinion, when it got approved, the master plan of approval required that Caltrans approve whatever was submitted.
I think we're going beyond the scope of the agenda item.
I just want to say that, you know, part of this problem was caused by something else. So there's some extenuating circumstances here. And if that hadn't happened, possibly the project would have gone on normally. You would have had more houses and we wouldn't be here today.
Thank you. I don't see any other council questions or comments at this point, so we will open it up to the public. And again, I'm going to ask the city attorney to state again what's before us, what we can decide tonight, just so it's clear. We're not really changing much.
The decision tonight is whether to direct staff or not to place this issue on a future council agenda, the issue being the CCNRs.
Livid Oak Ridge Estates.
We might need, you have the same problem as me. Keep that mic fairly aimed at your mouth.
Fine.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to just give some background and specifics, and these may not be the context of where the homeowners are. And the original project was for 111 homes. 25 have been sold. And the CCNRs that were delivered to the homeowners were from 2004. And in those CCNRs, the road maintenance was to be shared by the 111 lots. During 2012 and 2013, the developer amended the CCNRs without the input or knowledge of the homeowners. Within those amendments, the distribution of the road maintenance was shifted. The liability for the roads was shifted to the homeowners without their consent or knowledge or advice. in 2014, in August, almost 2 years later, the homeowners were given new copies of the CCNRs. Within those CCNRs, it is stated that the homeowners can be responsible up to $3,000 a year for road maintenance. So in other words, the amount that's projected could be $75,000 a year, and since there are only 25 homes, it's now the responsibility of the homeowners. The major question I have, and I'm not sure without our knowledge and within the context of the original CCNRs from 2004, there's nothing in them that ever indicated that that could happen. So that's the background of this. Thank you.
Thank you. We are asking folks to stay to a three-minute period, if possible. We will allow a second time around after everyone has had an opportunity to speak. We'll make sure that everyone has an opportunity to say whatever they would like. We just will take it in three-minute sections. Continue. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. My name is Greg Munakata. I'm the leader of the homeowners at Oak Ridge Estates. And I'm going to read a statement to you because I think that's the only way I'm going to get all of this in within 3 minutes. So forgive me for reading. In April of 2015, we submitted a proposal to City Manager Rochelle Ricard for new policy regarding approval of CCNR amendments. We said, quote, "The city could adopt a policy of not approving any amendment to CCNRs which would materially change the obligations of homeowners or developer without the amendment having the support of the developer and a majority of the homeowners. This policy is not trying to change a development's process for amending CCNRs. This policy is trying to expand the criteria used by the city for its process of review and approval of CCNR amendments, which is independent of the processes prescribed in a development's CCNRs. On July 13, 2015, the city attorney emailed me saying, quote, "I understand you have asked whether the city has legal authority to require the developer to modify the CCNRs and or the CCNR amendments for the Oak Ridge Estates project, including the amendments related to road maintenance. The answer is no," end quote. I replied, telling him the question he answered was not the one we had asked. Rochelle had led us to expect his response to our proposal for city policy regarding approval of CCNR amendments. I offered to meet with him to discuss the policy proposal. On July 21st, the city attorney emailed me again, essentially repeating what he said in his July 13th email, but adding 4 points. 3 of the 4 points expressed concerns about the city amending CCNRs and were not relevant, as we were not proposing the city amend CCNRs. The attorney's 4th point was, quote, "The city cannot withhold approval of CCNR amendments that comply with the conditions of approval for the..."
Go ahead and finish that statement.
Okay, thank you. And Rochelle said the basis for Brian's 4th point was in the conditions of approval for the Oak Ridge project, and there were no other documents supporting his position. I read through the conditions of approval for Oak Ridge Estates, and they do not say the city must consider only the conditions of approval when reviewing CCNR amendments. The conditions of approval for the Oak Ridge project say only that CCNR amendments related to road maintenance must be, quote, "in a form approved by the city," end quote. "In a form approved by the city" leaves wide open the criteria the city can use in judging whether or not to approve a CCNR amendment. The city attorney appears biased against our policy proposal, and after 2 cycles of misdirection and obfuscation, we have lost confidence in him. Attorneys are advisors. Attorneys are counselors. They are not decision makers. You on the council are the decision makers. I ask you to challenge the city attorney to provide clear and substantive grounds to support his refusal to to have you consider our policy proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Yeah, you would need to go to the microphone. That way it is recorded as part of the meeting and the city clerk can...
My name is John Whitworth. I have lived at Oak Ridge, one of the earlier folks that were bought in that beautiful project. And it's a rather complex issue. But I'm very thankful that you as a city council is taking a hard look at this. And to use the word blindsided, we have not been treated fairly. You know, there's a letter of the law and the spirit of the law. And we've been violated by the spirit, by the letter of the law, I should say. So I would appreciate open-mindedness and...
And again, the council will go into deliberation to see if we will continue this discussion at a formal meeting. Seeing no one else approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council, and now we
can bridge with what's going on now, but I think it'll protect people in the future. I think there can be something put in place in the process at the city that during the application process and in the hearings and what have you, that part of the approval that within the CC and ours that we come to some type of plan that say if there's a monetary change that takes place, you know, through the CC and ours and a majority of the homeowners, current homeowners don't feel they got treated right, that it comes to the city council. I think there's a formula that we can sit down. And I want to be very, very cautious that it's somewhat restrictive, that it's a serious deal that somebody doesn't like the color scheme of the house and he wants to add a color. We don't want to get involved in that. That's CC and ours. But I think there are some very serious matters, and this is one of them. Like I said, I've been doing this for 35 years. I've never seen anything like this, and I agree with the last man. There's something not right going on here. And I think as a city council, I think we can take a position of putting something into the process of a condition of approval within the CC&Rs where we can put a protection factor in for future buyers of some of the properties here in town. So I would agree to this problem.
Thank you. We have Councilman Fonzie, followed by Councilman Sturtevant, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Prepared to make a motion, so perhaps I should go last.
Let's hold. Mm-hmm. Go ahead with, let's see, that would be Councilman Sturtevant.
Well, I was going to say, in my line of work, whenever you hear what I call faint signals, when things don't go right, when things don't quite work out the way that we were hoping, or things don't work out the way you think they should, it gets my attention. So in this case here, like what Councilmember Kelly just said about the fact that he's never seen anything like this. You know, I myself was torn because I too empathize with the homeowners, but yet we have the process. So it's a difficult place to be when, because as a homeowner, I would not want that. What's happened to the process of vetting this out more thoroughly in a public, in the public arena, and take a closer look at it.
Thank you. And again, I think that's going with my concerns of, one, having a public process, and two, learning from experience. Two things I'm looking for. Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Like the others that have expressed, I'm very disheartened by what you've been going through and how you've been treated. And as Councilmember Kelly said, I'm not sure that anything we do makes a difference for you financially going forward, which is very unfortunate. I hope civilly that something can come about for you to find some relief. I certainly agree with the openness and having things out in public. I also get a little bit concerned about taking too much onto council that isn't policy, but that becomes into the details. We have a very well-equipped staff to look at changes to CCNR. So if there's something with a noise ordinance or a storm drain or whatever it happens to be, I don't know that we have to hash that out in public again as though we're redoing an entire new project. I think staff is very well equipped to do that. And maybe there's something in what we're talking about where there's a way to, I'm not quite sure how to say it, where if there is some dissatisfaction, there's a way to, you know, bring it to council.
Take this particular issue on because it is complicated. There's been a lot of misunderstandings. We still, I feel like we're using terminology differently, and there's just a lot of, there's just a lot of emotion at this point because we really haven't worked through a process that people have confidence in. So a lot of what I'm hoping is, one, we want to kind of define a narrow category that council would be more involved in the future, and specifically in these areas that are more complex and they could have some policy implications for the future. There may be some things we can learn from, and that we at least have an opportunity to have a very open discussion, because there's, if nothing else, we need to understand what we are disagreeing on and not have it be an emotional issue where we don't have confidence. So I can say I at times wish the city attorney had a different opinion. However, I have great confidence in him. I do think I've worked here long enough to work with several different city attorneys, and I do have confidence in Mr. Pierik. However, as you have noted, I think there's a time where the council wants to be more involved and weigh in more factors, and I think that's what Councilwoman Fonzi is proposing in this case. So I will then go on and turn it over to Councilwoman Fonzi.
Thank you. I think what I'd like to see most if we take action on this is what options we have, and they may be limited, and we may or may not want to choose those options, but I think that we need to look at them. So I'd like to make a motion requesting that the city manager bring back to a future meeting of the city council.
By Mayor O'Malley. A roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
And staff have enough direction? Thank you. And thank you for your input. Yes, we'll. That concludes the item Mayor O'Malley and Councilman Fonzi brought on the agenda. We will now continue on with council announcements and reports. And that I'd like to keep to activities outside of the committee reports. So we'll get to committee issues in a moment. I'll go ahead and go from my left to my right if anyone has an announcement or report on non-committee activities.
I would just like to announce that the Charles Paddock statue project is completed. We were able to, under the gun, get our recognition plaques and information plaques mounted next to the statue up there. And I would encourage all of you to go by. It tells a little story about Charles Paddock there for decades and decades to go on. So once again, I just want to thank everybody in the city that helped us, everybody in the community that helped us. Tom, you gave us a nice donation. I want to thank you for that, and encourage everybody to go by and take a look at it.
Nice to have a project actually complete. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
I don't know if this is the time and place, but we all received an invitation to go to an Eagle Scouts his ceremony, his celebration. I wonder if there's a policy, or we could have a policy to send a letter of congratulation for Eagle Scouts. This is actually
a letter that could be signed by all council members in recognition, particularly of Eagle Scouts. There may be other categories down the road, but that doesn't happen too often, and it's something that I think we would like to address. We used to have Jim Lewis around who kind of bird dogged that a little bit for us, but I think if staff could give that some thought and come back with a suggestion, or by consensus.
I think it's the 12th, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I've got it on my schedule. I'm going to try. It's a significant deal.
It is.
And, you know, if nobody else is going to come, and if we can get a letter forward, I would be more than glad to present it if I happen to be the lone person there. But I think, you know, that's a major deal in your community to be an Eagle Scout. And if you ever
want to kind of check in, there's a couple of organizations that interface with that, and that way we could make sure they know in general. That could just go to the city clerk. We could make sure we have a letter signed by all of us, and then whoever can make it. Sometimes more of us can make it, maybe if only one can make it, but that would be great. Then if we had that available.
Are we given approval for the
I think we're doing it by consensus.
Put the letter together in the next couple of days.
Is that realistic there, Mr. City Attorney?
I guess I'm not quite sure what you're planning.
Nothing we're going to vote on. The City Council is anxious for a process to make sure we are informed when there's an Eagle Scout having their ceremony in our community. That's something staff could work out. We would like to have a letter signed by all council for that person. And then anyone like the city manager does in so many cases just informs us of things in the community. We put it on our calendar. It would just be another calendared event, I think, because I would think we would want to be aware of this experience. Is there any comment from other council on this without getting into deliberation? Or shall we just leave it that's my recommendation to the city manager and see how she does with it?
I would just let the city manager, just give direction to the city manager to follow through on that item rather than for the council to take action on an item that's not on the agenda.
We'll leave it with that. Thank you, and thank you for bringing that up.
I just wanted to thank Councilmember Kelly for the hard work you did on that statue.
Interesting that the nose of Cosmos Topper from being rubbed by the kids
shining up
is
already
shining up.
It's already turning gold, yes.
Well, thank
good
you very
job.
Much.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let's go on to committee reports. And we'll begin with Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
I have no report.
Councilmember Fonzie.
I attended my first meeting of the RAC, the Water Resources Agency, and just wanted to let you know it was discussed in great detail the desalinization that's going forward in possibly Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. And just to make you aware that one of the topics that came up was so-called nuclear desal water. So this particular aspect will be coming before the RAC and before the Board of Supervisors, so it may entail some controversy. Also, I wanted to let you know that next Thursday is the LAFCO, Local Agency Formation Commission, meeting. That would be the 16th, again, to discuss the Paso Robles groundwater basin. This is expected to be a very long meeting from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. at the earliest. So I'll pack a lunch and keep you posted on what comes of that one, but that's going to be a major meeting. Other than that, that should be enough.
Thank you. Councilman Kelly.
No report.
Councilmember Sturdivant, and you might include your thought on the City Schools Committee.
I was going to say I don't have any report. I just would like the consideration of whatever the process would be to get alternates for you and I on the City Schools. That way, this last meeting we had to reschedule, which I apologize for having to do that. In the back meeting that would make it so we can have a process of moving forward that will not leave people hanging in the lurch.
Very good. And with that, not having checked in with City Attorney, I'll see if I can talk quick before he notices something. But as you know, it's tradition that the mayor has made appointments and asked for any alternates, and that if there was any disagreement by council, of course, could overrule the mayor. But I think in most cases, we are in pretty much agreement. So with that, I would go ahead and appoint Mayor Pro Tem Moreno as the alternate for the City Schools Committee, if in the absence of a person that could sit in. And so I'll go ahead with that unless there's any objection. We'll move on then to a few comments I will make. Of course, first is the City Schools Committee, and it would be good to have Mayor Pro Tem Marino involved with that to some degree, because one of the priorities I have is to look at the bike committee that's being developed in our community and partnering with the school that has a very strong bicycle club, and we want to look at a bike plan in the future in our city. So I think, again, Councilwoman Marino would be a good help in that area. I attended the county mayor's roundtable meeting, of course, and I thought the one significant issue was the police chief in Arroyo Grande talked about the importance of active shooter training and interagency cooperation. I had a different picture in my mind of what active shooter was. I was thinking maybe we'd get to have target practice, but as it turns out, no, that's not the case. Interesting to hear. I almost wanted to bring up that, you know, unfortunately, we had some active shooter training when there was the concern when could have been an automobile, whatever, but there was concerns of shots fired at our school, and I thought our police did a very good job interacting with our school district and meeting that challenge. But there is some challenges in these cases where there's multiple agencies involved. And I think it would be sometime in the future, I think it would be worth, Chief, if you would tell us a little bit about that. Not tonight. But some future time. I think it's an interesting topic. It's going to be brought up by all the mayors, and they're going to be checking in, and you'll probably be hearing from some of your other peers. I think we are pretty well set up with interagency cooperation more than other agencies have been, as in what I know. But I think it would be good to have that little discussion, maybe a 10-minute, 15-minute presentation in the future, if that would work. One of the issues before San Luis, well, let me hit with Integrated Waste Management Authority, which I'll be going to their board meeting tomorrow. One issue is some pushback by a lot of the local pharmacies that are not so much local pharmacies, but their statewide organizations are concerned about turning in prescription drugs that are no longer in use. If you recall, it used to be something that we dropped off at police station, and again, that was not working as well for law enforcement, and it is a process now that's going to be moved to the pharmacies. And there is a no-cost envelope that can be obtained at any pharmacy where you've got medications and need to dispose of properly. It is a problem sending things down the toilet, for example, if it works into wastewater treatment. There's throwing things away, having access by children. There's a lot of reasons you want to dispose of unused medications properly, and every pharmacy is going to be equipped to deal with that in the near future. One topic at San Luis Council of Governments that really has us all concerned, and was one of the main topics at the mayor's meeting, is the state has again changed the rules on us for transportation funds. And as you know, it's really a moving target. We are scheduling a meeting at council for some input on that with Ron DeCarli coming up. And we're fortunate that our own Kacho Ashajian is very active on an important committee dealing with this, so we do have some input, and we do have a good chance of having some change in this, because the governor has recognized this affects a lot of cities. It crosses party lines. It hasn't been fair with a few large counties really taking the bulk of the funding statewide. It doesn't help when you have a statewide system in such disrepair. So we'll need to have some discussion on that and keep informed what that impact is for us. And the last thing would be a regional transportation authority. Only, I think, one thing I would say that there's been a change in how tickets are distributed for passengers. And Paso Robles at this point does not have a way to get tickets to customers. And it really has led to a major impact on our city. So we thank everyone that's in the position of needing tickets, their patience with our city. I understand from our Regional Transportation Authority staff that's actually been a quadrupling of work for our staff, and they've handled it really without complaining. They've asked for some help. I am lobbying strongly for some solutions. One thing that I'm really wanting to see that we might be looking at is they are coming up with some vending machines that can be located outside. I'm pushing strongly that with some that are going to be coming on, that we look at getting one for our transit center, because I can't think of any better solution than to have that available right where our customers are, and it would be a great reduction of staff time. So that's one thing I'm pushing for at a regional level, as well as, you know, I want you to know that we're aware our staff is really taking on some extra work, and we're going to fight for some solutions. So thank you. Thank all of our staff for stepping up and meeting a need. I don't see any other council reports, any other individual determinations by staff. Then we are adjourned. Thank you.